You're listening to the Digicast from the Digitel.com.
This is Ken Hawkins with the Digitel, and we've sat down for a little chat with Andrew Green, co-founder of 12 South, which, if you don't know it off the top of your head, they do a series of Mac-only accessories, such as the BookBook, which is this kind of tome-like classic encyclopedia cover for the MacBook, and the backpack, which hooks on the back of the iMac as a little shelf. But anyways, so Andrew Green, say hello, Andrew Green.
Hi guys, Andrew Green here, co-founder of 12 South here in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina.
So we're in your new office, which is very new, 2-3 weeks new?
Yeah, a couple weeks new. Got the boxes still stacked up. Did the prerequisite trip to IKEA for our cheap furniture, and but we also have the prerequisite Arion chairs. So we're trying to make a real go at it of getting in an office and moving out of the home office finally.
Your office is on the, I guess this is the main street of Ion over in Mount Pleasant, which for those of you that don't know, Ion is it's kind of like a little recreation of historic downtown Charleston. It's very
Disneyland.
It's a little Disneyland, but it's...
Let me give it to you.
but when we actually go into the buildings, there's actually a building in there. So they do have that part up on Disneyland, whereas if you look around the back of Disneyland,
it's not just facades,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Disneyland is a very weird experience. But, so it's this recreation of, you know, downtown Charleston. It's very colonial. So in this new old world, you know, if you go, you know, back into the back of the building and kind of upstairs, you have most of the upstairs here, don't you?
Yep.
And I guess the word high tech applies to y'all.
Pretty much so.
Yeah,
sure.
This is high tech, you know, Mac only accessory company, and you know this region that's mainly known for, you know, old buildings, beaches, ports, and usually not a whole lot else. Old military bases too.
Well, yes and no. So Black Ball is just up the street.
Right. Yeah.
This colossal technology based software company.
Right.
You know, multi-zillion dollar thing. And then across the street, hidden in the woods, right across Mathis Ferry, is help me out, OTB? I'm sorry, that's off-street betting in New York. But what's the Traders, Autodesk Traders or whatever?
Oh.
What's the name? Traders Desk, whatever it is.
Yeah.
E Wall Street's over there, the guys that sold for like, you know, $1 billion to Citibank and processed something like 10 to 25% of every like Wall Street transaction
right. Is
across the street from us in Mathis Ferry. So we have the beaches and the retirees and stuff like that. But there's actually a groundswell of technology companies within, you know, just a mile or two of here. Blackballed and then Traders Desk, whatever the company
is
called.
And we were talking about this earlier, and you got Boeing coming, obviously, which has been the buzz. And
sure.
Then you have SPAWAR, which is, you know, huge, you know, naval weapons research and all that sorts of things.
Well, so no, I'm here because DLO first came down here in 2004. And DLO, short for Digital Lifestyle Outfitters, was a huge consumer electronics company,
right.
Really responsible in some ways for the surge of the whole iPod accessories ecosystem.
Right.
And so Jeff Grady, the founder and you know, former owner of DLO, came down to Charleston and brought me down here from Griffin Technology in Nashville. And from you know, here in Charleston at King and Queen Street, we grew DLO to past $100 million in revenue and then sold to Philips or north of that. And so now Philips Electronics is downtown, you know, and that's the former office of DLO. And Philips Electronics is mobility division. Their global mobility division's headquarters are downtown right by the park.
Yeah,
so
that's what's so striking about this area is, you know, it's known for nothing like that, but
sure.
Yet there is this, you know, huge subculture of it, and it's, I guess, in some ways good that it's kind of nice that it's not known for just being a huge kind of, you know, research and technology area, but at the same time, it's kind of a shame that it doesn't get a little bit more credit for it.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, you're not working 24 hours a day unless you're a startup called 12 South. But once we chill out, hopefully we're not going to be working at the end of the day, and you have to choose where to live, where to raise your kids,
right.
What to do on the weekends and stuff like that. And, you know, being, you know, a good 6.5 minutes from the Atlantic Ocean, you know, being right across the bridge from like the one of the Condé Nast number three tourist destination in the United States is not the, the worst place to spend your time not working. And the climate is amazing. So, I mean, I think one of the things that keeps Charleston a little off the map is because it's off the map. It's not one of the crossroads like Atlanta or Nashville and stuff like that. You have to go out of your way to get to Charleston down 26. And in some ways, I think that's kind of part of what keeps it isolated is literally its physical isolation. But it's an amazing place to live. Given the opportunity to choose where to live, you know, it's absolutely a secret that's becoming less and less of a secret. And, you know, that's, you know, part of the reason we arrived here.
So how's that? I mean, in some ways, Charleston is pretty well connected. I mean, of course, you have the, you know, internet strong, and you have a port here and things like that. How is that on the business side? I mean, being in a place that to really, you can't, you know, just hop in the car or the train to get to another city. You kind of have to usually, you can drive. I mean, you can drive to Charlotte, it's 3 hours, but you know, most places you have to get on a plane and
right. So I mean, I'll just get it out of the way and say that the Achilles heel of doing business in Charleston is the airport.
Right.
Yeah. There, I mean, there's very few direct flights since AirTran left. There's not affordable flights to anywhere, even in the Northeast. It went from, you know, $250 to $300 to New York to $800, just with the airlines kind of just punishing you for AirTran keeping those prices down for a year or two. So the Achilles, we'll just get it out of the way and say the Achilles heel of doing business in Charleston is your lack of options flying out. There's very few places you can go without transferring through, you know, one or two other places. Other than that, it's amazing. And your location, you know, matters less and less. And so you can make it a lifestyle choice as much as anything. There's also an immense talent pool coming out of College of Charleston. That has a great energy and a lot of you know, to offer, you know, upstart entrepreneurial businesses. And the other funny thing that we kind of learned by accident, you know, while operating DLO here, is everybody wants to visit you, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so while at Griffin we did business with the Best Buys and the Targets and the Apples of the world, they never came to visit us really per se. And so we're here in Charleston, you know, running DLO, and you know, Target's coming to town for a week, and Best Buy buyers want to know when's a good time to pop down to Charleston. I don't know, maybe April in the spring or something, right? Or actually, they like the winter time because they're in Minneapolis. But so, aside from it being a great place to live when you're not working, it was actually an amazing place to invite your colleagues and your clients to come visit you, and they quite often will.
Right. So you said DLO was responsible for you being in Charleston?
It was. Jeff Grady recruited me to come down to DLO to take over as vice president of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of put the bow on the package for him.
So you that's when you first moved to Charleston. When was
2004, late 2004.
Where were you before that?
Nashville, working at Griffin Technology.
Okay. So I guess you're a Southerner, or are you...
sort of. Depends on who's asking. You know, so most of the 90s actually spent in New York City.
New York City, okay.
And that was really a foundation of kind of learning what to do, what I do now, is basically the Giuliani years, the decade, you know, spent in New York, really, like, you know, honed my skills. Before that, I was a wannabe singer-songwriter, that bought a Macintosh. I got a small contract from Warner Brothers. And with my, like, advance, I bought a Mac, 2CI,
right,
and taught myself the graphics programs. So I went to New York, and I'd blown through my advance money is when I started temping in New York, and really just kind of learning by fire in New York. And it's been, like, a connect the dots. One thing leads to another from that point on. But so I give my time in New York City a lot of credit for the capabilities of everything I do every day. But that said, I was born in Nashville, raised in D.C., spent a lot of time in New York, so it depends on who's asking.
Yeah, and just how Southern they are.
Yeah, right. But so to answer your question on why the heck we ended up in Ion, we're residents of Ion.
Okay.
And we have three children, two of which go to the Montessori Charter School that happens to be here in Ion. It's amazing. They can walk to school and ride their bikes. And so when we were forming where to do 12 South, the instinct was to go back downtown to go find that exposed brick second, third floor place. You know, this is what I pictured doing. But then The downtown story is a lifestyle story. Mm-hmm. And the theory is that you can walk. So if you live downtown, you can work downtown, and your kids go to school downtown, and you can walk. Well, we had created two out of those three things in ION, which is kind of a across-the-bridge,
right,
modern plumbing facsimile of downtown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what was obvious but didn't occur to us is that if we want to create what people think of as a downtown, we already are in the middle of it. And
right,
all we need to do is to go find office space and walking distance, and we complete the trilogy of having a residence that you can walk, that your children can walk to school, and then you can walk to work. And so the essence of what makes living downtown great, we had actually already recreated here. So it only made sense to try and go ahead and establish the office space here as well.
Yeah.
So now the only goal is to make the office as cool as a downtown office would be.
Yeah.
So, but it's worth it to put effort into that, because from a location scenario, we already had two out of the three. And so putting the office in ION and Mount Pleasant only made sense to our lifestyle. So we spent all of our time either working or playing and hanging with family, and not in a car, traveling, or anything like that.
Right.
So we kind of created the essence of what is amazing in a downtown experience, and our own ION downtown, so to speak.
Yeah.
So
well,
it works for us.
I'm going to hold my hand up to the window here.
Yeah.
And I'm like a downtown office. My hand is still warm.
I know, right? So, it's cool.
Actually,
so
put like a little cold air vent up there to really recreate,
it. Well, so we did.
Office.
So, I mean, this office was this like old, like stodgy lawyer's office thing, right? And so the first thing we did was like rip up the carpet. Ah, concrete floors. Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and there was all these like blocked off like office walls. And well, these walls have to go. And our landlord was funny. He said, "You can't take out the walls." He said, "Well, we need passageways between those." So he said, "Oh, you mean big doors?" So we really didn't break down any walls. We made really giant door openings.
With no doors. yeah, because actually when, you know, I walked up the stairs and we walked in, we were a little confused because on the door, I think it still says off suites like 200 to 202.
Something like that,
and
right.
And like, there's only one door.
Well, and on our 1 year anniversary, should we be lucky enough to make it that far, we've already figured out how to do an authentic exposed brick in here, right? So, I mean, the biggest problem about this is that it was kind of not so creative offices. So that's really easy to manufacture. There's things you can do to do that. So as long as we can kind of make a work environment that is inspiring, is, you know, kind of just cool enough, then we're fine kind of being in the little Disney World ION thing.
A lot of, you know, the readers have probably seen it, but
if they haven't, they definitely got to go to the site, 12south.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the tip of the spear for the company, is the website. The website really encompasses all that we are. And, you know, obviously it's the place that has all the information on our products, from the book arc stand for MacBook to the backpack shelf for the IMAX and cinema displays, to the surface pad. You need a surface pad on your MacBook. It's this really cool little leather pad that kind of goes on top. And funny enough, it kind of makes the keys and the bezel match the rest of the computer, and gives you a nice, comfortable place to put your wrists.
Yeah, actually, before I leave, I should check one of those out, because I've seen it, and like, I kind of want to like see it in person and check it out.
It's very, very cool. It's kind of one of those products like the BookBook that look even better in person than the photos. The photos can only go so far, but when you kind of touch and smell kind of a handcrafted leather product like the BookBook, it really makes an impression.
Yeah, I will say that a lot of times you see products online, and they look really nice, but then you touch it in person, and it's kind of like, oh.
It's a letdown, right?
Yeah, this is pretty nice. You know, it's got a nice felt interior on it, and it feels not cheap.
Right. Well, and felt is cheap. So it's actually a microfiber moleskin interior. We'll save the felt for the cheap version. And so, no, it's three different kinds of genuine leather, and a moleskin microfiber interior padded. And for the 13 and 15 inches. It's fun watching the Twitter, watching people get their orders and go, wow, it looks even cooler in person, stuff like that. So it's been fun seeing the reactions of people have to the BookBook.
Yeah, how long, I mean, y'all opened up in just like July of last year?
So our first product that we announced was the backpack shelf for iMac, this clever
right.
little kind of $29 shelf that holds a hard drive on the back of an iMac. We announced that last year, August 11th. And then the month after that, we announced the book arc. And we actually never got around to announcing the surface pad till we made a few more in December. And then also in December, we did our base jump, which is a subwoofer for the MacBook. Just with just USB power and audio, you connect it to a MacBook while you're on the road, and it really dramatically increases the performance of your own MacBook speakers. Yeah, it's cool. So, and then, you know, the packaging is certainly something we put a lot of thought into as well.
How do y'all go about, I don't know, I guess getting these made? Like, what's the, I mean, just me being unfamiliar with the industry, I mean, you basically kind of create it on the computer, send it off, somebody makes a prototype, and you kind of go back and forth?
Well, so we work with various manufacturers in different locations in the world. And, you know, honestly, it all kind of starts with the idea. And so you have the core concept, and you usually kind of prototype it kind of by any means necessary. Sometimes you do sample books and say that, well, okay, it works like this, but then it looks like this thing, and then it should weigh as much as this thing. And so to your partners and your manufacturers, you kind of communicate all as many of the elements as you can. And for the actual design perspective on it, it's kind of a by any means necessary. It might be a doodle sketch on a napkin. I've sent those to Asia, you know, little just Sharpie doodles to, like, you know, doing some light duty CAD work like an Adobe Illustrator or something like that. Honestly, I try and communicate just the core of the product and then work with the manufacturers to finesse it to a production ready product.
Okay.
I try and not overthink it from a production standpoint, because we've got to work with our partners who probably will know best how to do it. So as long as they have the core functionality and the design aspects of it, you know, I really kind of trust them to make it a production ready thing. And that's just a matter of going back and forth.
So y'all don't really do the, I mean, you might get into the sum, but it sounds like you don't do a whole lot of, like, pulling up a really exact 3D model of it. Okay, we want exactly, like, this type of curvature. You kind of do more something more conceptual, and they kind of go, okay, well, this is how we can do it. And
a little bit of both. So as a rule, we don't deliver absolutely, like, totally finished production-ready CADs.
Right.
And to my point is that when you do that, your factory is going to redo them anyway.
Right.
So quite often, you're causing yourself more time and troubles overthinking it. And so what is really important to us is the functionality and then the core presentation design. Getting that into a box on a shelf, we work together.
Interesting.
But so, there's times when we are communicating and delivering very specific stuff. However, it's usually very specific design elements, a finish, a core shape, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it depends on the product. You know, the book arc is a relatively simple product, but the devil's in the details on it, right?
Right.
So because it is such a simple product, having it absolutely perfect is really, really important. And then the packaging. We spend probably as much time on the packaging as we do the product. And that's because that is the product. You know, a person, the package isn't throwaway anymore, and we've invested a huge amount of time and money in making a package that is not recyclable but reusable, right? In terms of making green packaging, reusable is way better than recyclable. And so that's why our book arc box is this gift box. I mean, it's a gift box like you buy an empty gift box at Target. And then we give them a little list of things to do with the box, you know, when they're done with it. And so it's a whole presentation, you know, not totally different than Apple, but we're not doing it just because Apple does great packaging too. We're doing it because the package is the product as much as the product, and it really is our first impression, and we're really determined to make a good one.
Yeah, on a tangent here, when you talked about reusing it, that always kind of gets me out of, like, because it's like, I always view the whole, like, recycling little triangle.
It's reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah. And everyone always jumps, like, oh, you got to recycle. I'm
right.
Like, no, if you could just, first of all, not use it, and then if you could actually reuse it, then you can skip the whole recycling step in the first place.
Right.
So.
And what does that do? That adds value to the package.
Right.
Right. If what you do doesn't go to the trash can or even the recycle bin, you've added value. You've given them something that, you know, that is a surprise. They didn't buy the box to get the book art, but they got it anyway.
Right.
They were using it for something, and so we've added value to our customers', you know, experience all around.
So have you seen the kind of Apple cult of the unpackaging experience?
Unboxing. Unboxing's fun. Yeah, it's great.
Have you like got a lot of like any sorts of like YouTube videos and people kind of salivating over
all over the place? Very cool. It's cool. The book art maybe as much as anything. The book art, you know, it was interesting when we were developing it. It was, you know, it's either a bent slab of steel or it's a sculpture work of art. And in a lot of ways, it's how we present it that makes people understand how we view it. And so it's done really well, kind of turning into like, you know, a work of art on your desktop, a sculpture.
So that's my question. 12 South. What's the name from?
The name.
Yeah.
we moved here from Nashville. We had a house in a neighborhood in Nashville called 12 South.
Okay.
12 South is a neighborhood in Nashville. It's kind of like the Soho of Nashville. And I own the Earl, which actually these days is really, really rare and important.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a nice, clean Earl. But as we were kind of like, you know, forming what the brand is and what it really means as kind of core message, one of the things we always knew is we didn't want to do hundreds and hundreds of products.
Right.
You know, we don't really want to take hundreds of SKUs, throw them against the wall, and see which three stick. We wanted to do a handful of SKUs a year and really be passionate about them and get behind them and support them. So it came to that, well, how many is that? About a dozen.
Right.
So we were doing the marketing copy, and we came to this line. Is it 12 South wants to do 12 great ideas a year for the Mac community?
Even going since July, right? July?
Yeah, first. Well, no, the announcement, the book, the backpack was announced August 11th.
August 11th. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're on target for 12 in the first.
We kind of are. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right? So we had like four products. It's basically a product a month. August, September, October, November. We had four products of last year. We announced the book this year. We have some other stuff about to roll out. Now, the big controversy is whether colors count. And so it depends, right? So we have four surface pads. So are we good for a quarter?
Whenever you come short in the year, it's like you introduce the pink surface pad.
Yeah, right. So, you know, as a stake in the sand, it's a wonderful thing.
Right.
And you know, and if our customers or fans kind of like take it to us for that and stuff like that, that's great. You know what that means? That means they cared.
Yeah.
That means they were counting. You know, so I'd rather have a person say, hey, you only did 10 products, where's the other two? And give a hoot than to like, you know, not. So, you know, it's kind of a fun kind of stake in the sand for us. And but the fundamental message behind it is that we're going to do a handful of products that really matter, mm-hmm. that we really care about, and not just as many pieces of plastic as we can squirt out into the market.
So
it's not us.
Can you tease any sorts of fun things you might have coming out around the corner?
No way.
No fun.
No, yes, I can. That's easy. So our latest product is a book.
Right.
It was not a coincidence. It was announced the week before the iPad.
Okay.
And we've been inundated with people saying, oh, so you're going to do a book for the iPad, right?
Right.
Well, we're absolutely exploring that. It couldn't make more sense.
Oh, yeah.
And so I can't say for certain that we're going to do it. But if we can do a version of the book that makes sense for the iPad, and it already does, we'll see about that.
Are you going to call it the book or the book pad? Or?
I mean, I think we're on book.
Book.
You know, it's a fun kind of goofy little thing. And,
yeah.
And that'll be our family of products like this.
Very cool. Apple's case was not terribly impressive, so.
It had a lot of functionality in it, though.
Yeah, the whole kickstand thing is kind of
the iPad's really interesting, and, you know, we're not going to go crazy and just like, again, we're not going to go crazy and throw 100 ideas at the iPad like I think some of our competitors are going to.
Right.
We're going to let them. It's going to kind of be that tug of war where like the small little companies against like the firefighters.
Right.
And so the whistle blows and the small company just lets the rope go and the firefighters fall in the mud. Whatever. So we're going to let the big companies do the super predictable, typical stuff that they're going to do for the iPad. And we'll only do iPad accessories if they're special. If they make sense, if they bring something to the table that the other companies, you know, most probably won't. So other than that, we'll really just kind of keep focusing on the core Mac computers as well. End of the day, 12 South is a product company.
Yeah.
Specifically a Mac-only product company.
Yeah, I might have to go buy one of those and try and stick a PC in it and take a photo of it and send it to you. And get
No, it gives me the heebies. You can do it, just don't tell me.
I mean, I'm gonna put a PC in it, run Linux on it.
That's just how we roll. It's really kind of funny, you know. There's great accessories out there for PCs.
Right.
There just didn't happen to be a lot of people focused on the Mac, and I think Mac users. Really appreciate people buy a Mac not to be like everyone else.
Right.
Although there's a lot of Macs now, so now they're like every other Mac owner. But never mind that. They want special stuff. And a lot of new Mac owners are coming from the iPod industry that was a $1 billion accessories industry just for them. And so they go to the Apple store and buy their MacBook, and they look at the MacBook section and go, what the hell? Number one, this is all kind of coming from PC stuff. Number two, there's not a lot of personality-driven stuff that's really innovative and unique to my Mac, and that's what I want. And so that's really what Tool South is trying to deliver.
Yeah, I've used the Mac on and off for years, and that's always driven me nuts. Almost any computer case manufacturer. I think there's maybe one out of like San Francisco I bought, like it was like a neoprene case and had a Velcro thing on it, and like they actually made it specifically for a Mac, and it was great because it actually fit right. And a lot of times you buy cases and it's like the thing just floats around in it and drives me nuts. I'm like, why would I buy a case that's this protective and the thing floats around in it?
Well, and I mean, it also affords us a tremendous amount of focus, right?
Right.
So if we're just trying to do stuff for Macs, we don't have 150 other computers to see if it works or doesn't work, or fit or doesn't
fit. Which is really, in my opinion, the Achilles heel of Linux and Windows is that, you know, Apple and, you know, and companies like yourself, they just have to design for, you know, at any given time, basically five different models.
Everything for everybody.
Yeah, but if you're doing Windows, it's like all the drivers, and it's like, I mean, take for example the bass jump. If you had done that for Windows, you know, how much more troubleshooting and tech support and testing would you have had to done to make it compatible with, you know, 500 different brands?
Well, and so all right, so that is from a kind of utility a focus, mm-hmm. perspective and advantage. And the other cool thing that happens is that when you do something really cool for Mac, that like actually attracts PC users, right?
Yeah.
And so Twitter's amazing on the book, going, no, it makes me want to buy a MacBook. We're like, really? But so actually accessories did that on iPods, right? A lot of people wanted an iPod because of this whole accessories industry. They can personalize it and make it theirs and use it how they want. And a great accessory, if we're really, really lucky, actually elevates the platform itself.
Yeah.
And it's a lofty goal, but you know, certainly worth considering.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, cool. Well, thanks again for taking the time to chat. And,
thank you.
It's great to know that there's a company like yours in Charleston.
Thanks for listening to another edition of the DigiCast. Check back with us this weekend for another DigiCast on the upcoming Brewvival in North Charleston with the Charleston Beer Exchange and Coast Brewing.